before I we get into the candidates forum, I neglected to mention that our group sells the entertainment book, and we have a copy on that table. The money is used for a scholarship fund, and we hope that you'll consider buying one. You don't have to buy it tonight. You can call me anytime, and I'll see you get one. And the very nice gals at the Bank of Green County are keeping copies on hand there, so right here in Fuxaki, you can get one there or calls. Okay, so now we're going to introduce our candidate.
Hey, may I ask a question before we get started? Just a brief question. Please excuse me for interrupting. Since this is such a small group tonight, we'd like permission to ask our own questions in our own voices.
No, that's not the format. Please sit down.
Ma'am, that would be a democratic thing to do.
No, we're not allowing that because you have already tried to usurp our group here by passing out material that you did not, well, somebody did.
I didn't do it.
And whoever did not have permission. And I do want to issue a disclaimer that our group had nothing to do with that. And I wish that someone had just placed it on the table. If people wanted to have a copy, they could have done that. The format here is to write your question on a card, and I will decide the questions that will be asked.
So what you're saying is that you're going to tell us that if you don't like our question, you won't be asked?
That's right.
Ma'am, that's not fair. It's so undemocratic. There are important questions that need to be asked, need to be answered here tonight.
I'm sorry, but I don't believe that.
You don't believe that? So
no.
You're exercising censorship over what people ask?
That's right. Yeah. I would like this to be a pleasant evening. I do not wish to have candidates assassinated or attacked.
You're
in any
making
way.
Assumptions that you shouldn't be making.
Perhaps,
but... We would be respectful and we'd be asking legitimate questions.
Well, then please put them on your card and they'll be asked.
But you've already indicated that you'll probably reject them.
No, I did not say that. What I said was I have the right to not ask questions, or if some people ask the same question in different ways, then I would combine the question.
Will we be allowed to respond to the answers then? Can it be?
No. This is a candidate's forum. The candidates are who is on.
And it's not a citizen forum.
That's correct.
It's not a knowledge forum.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. Having explained that, I'm not certain, but I think maybe we'll do the treasurer candidates first. And we had a drawing, and the lucky first speaker is Peter Marco. So I invite Peter. I will just explain that we'll expect maybe about 5 minutes of some information about the candidate and anything he would like to say about his platform, his anticipations for the county job, whatever really he'd like to say. And you all should have cards, and if not, we have more. And we have members who will pick up your questions. And after all the candidates have spoken, then we will ask the candidates if they would respond to the questions. Thank you.
Well, you know that my name is Peter Michaels, and I am a candidate for county treasurer. I'll tell you a little bit about my background. I have a bachelor's degree in accounting and a master's degree in business administration from Suffolk University in Boston, Massachusetts. Upon graduation from graduate school, I enlisted in the Navy, served aboard the USS Franklin D. Roosevelt, tapped aircraft carrier off the coast of Vietnam for 2 years. When I came back, I went back to school, and I also went to North Adams State College to teach for approximately 25 years. While I was there, I earned an advanced certificate in taxation and an advanced certificate in economic development from the University of Oklahoma. During my tenure at North Adams State College, I taught financial accounting courses and governmental accounting courses. I was the executive director of the North Adams Community Development Corporation, which at that time was the city's public authority, and I was their chief executive officer. I also held the Sam Walton Chair of Free Enterprise at the college, and I have an extensive publication record that basically deals with public-private ventures and how they work and how they do not work. Upon retiring from North Adams State College, I went to the Green Mountain Economic Development Corporation in White River Junction, which was an economic development corporation that was funded by the state of Vermont, stayed there for about 3 years, and came to Greene County in 1996 as first full-time economic developer. And in that position, I was responsible for recruitment, retention, and also for creating shovel-ready sites. I stayed for 6.5 years. I then joined the city of Hudson as the executive director of the Columbia, executive director of the Columbia-Hudson Partnership, which then, you know, the city of Hudson separated from, and I became executive director of Hudson Community Development and Planning Agency and Hudson Development Corporation. Hudson Development Corporation is a public authority in the state of New York and is required under the Authority Budget Office to report. I stayed there for 2.5 years, decided then to retire, and lasted in retirement for 32 days. I was bored, I decided to do something, so I ran for Catskill Town Supervisor. First time I ventured into the political realm, I won. I was unopposed, I have to tell you that, and I wondered why. I thought there must be people out there that know what this job entails, and that's why I'm the only one running. It has been an exciting and wonderful experience. It has also been very challenging, because in the end, we are faced with outside influences that we have no control over, and we must figure out how to deal with. Example, this year, we have had to take a very, very hard stand on our budget. This is the first year that town employees who are not under union contract have not received a raise, and they are not happy. This is the first year that they're not even getting their automatic step increases. This is the first year that the town of Catskill has basically said no long-term contracts, not even with the fire departments. We do not know what's going to happen in 2012 or 2013, but from what I read, what I understand, and what I see, we are in for a long, long siege. And that siege is going to require us to do a number of things that we're not going to be happy about doing. In the end, we may have to cut jobs. In the end, we may have to cut services. In the end, we may have to raise taxes. Or in the end, we may have to actually go to reval. Because I have to tell you that there is only one town in Greene County that has 100% valuation. And that's the town of Holcomb. You can't get there from here. It's the town of Holcomb. I am running for county treasurer for a number of reasons. Number one, I have extensive governmental accounting experience. Number two, I have grant administration experience, and we're going to need to do more of that. Unfortunately, when you deal with state grants, the requirements become more and more difficult to complete. I'm presently consulting to the city of Hudson. I am their consultant grants administrator. And it could be a full-time job, but it isn't. So I managed to do that also. As the former economic developer for Greene County for 6.5 years, I knew what it took to create what you see out on 9W. That was a very, very long process. First of all, the purchase of land. Secondly, the installation of infrastructure, water, sewer. And at the same time, a competitive environment where an economic development agency in Greene County had to compete against 10,000 other agencies throughout the United States. It was rewarding, it was exciting, and it was also a little disappointing, because you know there are a lot of tire kickers out there. And I have to tell you, after many, many years of doing that, and now not doing it, I've come to the conclusion that we need to rethink how we attract industry. And one of the ways is we need to go back and revisit pilots, because no matter what anybody tells you, a payment in lieu of taxes comes out of taxpayer dollars. And we take this issue of people coming or companies coming, setting up, taking their 10 years of pilot and disappearing and leaving us with an empty building and jobs that really are not the kind of jobs that we're looking for. So I just got the timeout sign here, so I will end. I am running on the Republican-conservative line.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Our next candidate is Alan. Alan Cabese, who is running for Greene County Treasurer.
Sorry. Thank you, everybody. Can you hear me? Is that okay? Country Women's Network for hosting this. This is the only event of its kind that I know of that's planned for the whole county, and I view this as incredibly important. It's the only opportunity voters are going to have to get to see all the candidates and ask questions. So I think everybody should give a round of applause to them for doing this. I'm going to switch my presentation around a little bit just to sort of go in the order that Peter laid out, which seemed to work out well, and I'll just give you my background first. I went to college for electrical engineering and worked for General Electric as a power systems engineer for 5 years, partly in Schenectady up here in the Albany area and partly in many locations around the world. I went back to business school to get my MBA in finance and accounting at Columbia University's Graduate School of Business. In 95, and I have been working as a financial analyst since then. Basically, that is, I've been working at investment advisory firms, some of the more prominent ones in the state, for the better part of the last 15 years. I left in the mid-2000s to as a director of Credit Suisse First Boston to start my own consulting firm, providing the same financial advice. So over this 15 years, I have provided financial strategy and financial modeling advice to pension and portfolio managers around the country. The Fidelities in Boston, T. Rowe Prices, and American Funds of the world. And I've been doing that pretty well for the better part of the last 15 years. I've gotten some awards in the Wall Street Journal from national polls of these money managers from around the country who really have no other interest other than to give credit to the people that have helped them protect and grow people's retirement funds and investments. So I've been named best analyst on the street in the Wall Street Journal, and I've been a member of the All-Star Analyst team from Institutional Investor a number of times over the years, and basically gotten good recognition in financial advice as a financial analyst. So I'd like to actually move on to more of the county issues that we're going to be dealing with and looking at and that you should be thinking about as you're selecting the next treasurer. As most of you probably know, Willis Vermillier retired in the middle of his term a month or so ago after being there for a generation, I guess, 18 years. So we haven't elected a new treasurer in quite some time. And also, I've just learned today that Dan Frank is leaving this week. You know, he's finally, he's sort of been leaving for quite some time now, but apparently this is going to be the last week that he's there. So, you know, just from a talent standpoint, the county is going to be in a very significant state of flux over the next year. And honestly, it couldn't be at a worse time. You know, we have, as Dan Frank himself originally pointed out in July, a $5 to $10 million budget deficit at the county, which is pretty significant on a budget that's $100 million in size for our county. Sort of walk that back a little bit in the Daily Mail interview that you might have read this week and sort of saying, well, don't take that too, you know, that's, you know, just sort of a number out there and, you know, don't rely on that, but I'm not going to give you anything else. So, you know, we're sort of left as a county here going into the election without any true reliable sense of what the finances of the county are. And we were told in that article that we would find out what the budget for 2011 is going to be on the day before the election, perhaps. So there's a couple of great unknowns about how bad 2011 is going to be, but it's going to be pretty bad, and I think we all need to take that into consideration. We have not only a $5 to $10 million budget deficit for just next year, but over the last 5 years, we've used up our entire rainy day surplus fund, $10 million. We had $10 million given to us in tobacco settlement award several years ago in 2005. And we had a rainy day fund of $10 million, which has been used up extremely reliably every year in this county. We have run a budget deficit of close to $2 million, just planned out of the gate. This is our budget. We're going to balance it by taking $2 million out of the retirement fund, the savings fund, the rainy day fund, whatever you want to call it. And this is sort of how we've gotten to this point. We've used up every dollar of our $10 million surplus fund. We have taken on, just in the last 3 years, $10 million more in debt at the county. We've gone up from $17 million in debt in 2007 to $27 million in 2010. So we are facing a budget deficit next year. It's fairly significant, and we've used up all of our savings, and we've sort of run up the credit line pretty well, too. We've got a lot of really hard choices to make next year. You know, and Peter talked about, you know, some of those. It's happening everywhere. You know, it's happening, you know, at the national level, at the state level, and unfortunately, we've got to start dealing with our own problems and walking the walk right here at home and trying to get our finances back in proper order, and that's probably going to take several years to do. So, basically, there are several things the Treasurer is going to have to do. One is just instill a greater sense of fiscal responsibility. 7 years in a row of having a budget deficit averaging $2.5 million every year is, as any of you would agree, running your own household budgets is no way to operate. We have to live within our means. We have to at least start to live within our means in a couple of years, you know, at least every other year or something. You know, we've got to start to, given the fact that we have no more savings and very little credit, we're really going to have to, you know, be more disciplined than we have been. And, I've gotten a lot of grief in public about, you know, how I would perhaps jawbone the legislature into being a little bit more financially responsible. The treasurer does not get to vote on the budget, as many of you have seen in the papers, and the treasurer will not have a final say on how the money is spent or what is spent. But as the treasurer, you are one of only four elected officers, countywide officers in this county, and I believe that you have, you know, a public duty to let the public know if the county is being run in a fiscally irresponsible manner. And I've said publicly that I will, you know, play that role properly and try and help protect our county's credit rating, which will be in great risk next year. So one of the most important things that has to be done is to bring a sense of fiscal responsibility to the county. One of the other things that I'd like to do is bring a sense of transparency. I just talked about how, you know, we really have no idea what the state of the financial budget is for next year right now, going into an election, and I would like to put much more of the county's finances online. I figure if it's foilable and it's something that the public should be allowed to have, you should just put it online. Don't tie up somebody's job responding to FOIL requests. Just get the information out there. Let the public know where the money is being spent. If you're not really willing to do that, you're probably not happy with where the money is being spent, and there's not really a good reason not to do that. So I'd like to do that, and I would also like to start a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline at the county treasurer's office. This has been done at a number of other counties in our area, Ulster in particular. We have a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline at the DSS department, but having it countywide would be very productive as well. you get a lot of calls with people who don't understand what's going on more often than not, but the few calls a year that you do get with people giving you good insight into how taxpayer money is not being used well or worse, you know, winds up paying for itself if you look at these programs in other counties. So those are just three of the things that I would like to do, and I'm sort of being given the nod that I'm out of time here. So, thank you.
Are you first?
I believe so.
Okay, I forgot. Our candidate for county judge on the Republican line.
Thank you. Can I put this in here? Or, you know?
I wouldn't.
Yeah, you're at your own risk.
lose votes in a heartbeat, you know.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. I certainly appreciate it. I echo Alan's words. This is a great opportunity to address some voters, and it is greatly appreciated. I didn't know really how much time we were going to have, so I planned for like 50 minutes, so I'm going to have to pare this down on the spot. I'll try to cover some points pretty quickly. A little bit about my background. I'm a proud graduate of Coxsackie, Athens, just a stone's throw from here, and I grew up locally just up the hill. Proud graduate of the class of 1984, then I went off to Cornell University in central New York, graduated in 1988, and then off to Albany Law School soon after that. I came back to this community. This community is incredibly important to me. It's where my family is. I take my work that I've done for the county very seriously. I've been the DA for quite some time. It goes without saying that this community is important to me, and I know it's important to you. As far as my legal career, I'd note that when I started in 1993, I worked for my sister Joan for 3 years in private practice. I worked in the family court extensively, represented a lot of children as law guardian. A law guardian, I know you know what that is. You represent a child's interest in court. Took that work very seriously. General practice, I represented litigants in court. I learned from Joan. She was a great teacher. She's a great person. She's also a voter, so I'm trying to, you know, I know, candidly, Dave, she's still on the fence, so, you know, I'm pissing up a little here. In 1996, I was hired as an assistant district attorney under Ed Cloak. And then after that, in 1997, I was successful in becoming the full-time chief assistant for Greene County. Over the years, in my 14 years in the DA's office, 13 years as chief assistant, I prosecuted thousands of cases. I've been involved in many felony trials.
You prosecute a lot of innocent people.
No, that's not true, sir. I appreciate it. You know, I'm gonna if you can give me an opportunity to speak, maybe there will be some questions that you've written on the cards that I can answer.
You will. You'll address those questions.
Please don't
interrupt. Are you going to allow this? Because I find this offensive.
I do too.
Okay?
Please ignore anybody from the
I'm going to do my best to finish. I mean, I also understand and appreciate the First Amendment, but I also appreciate the format that you set down. But I certainly am prepared to go forward. I've spent my entire 17-year legal career practicing in the Greene County Court. I've been in the trenches representing clients, whether they were children, a party to civil litigation, or the people of this county in a criminal prosecution. What I would suggest to you that my experience over 17 years of representing children, being in court, dealing with victims of crime, dealing in court with litigants, it gives me a unique perspective from which to view the job. I think as a judge, it's critical that you're able to spend the time and listen to the issues. It's very important that you understand where the parties are coming from. And where does that come from? That comes from your life experience. It comes from your experience as an attorney. And I would humbly suggest to you that that type of experience is critical to being a good judge. And I will tell you without hesitation that I'm pursuing this position because I believe I can make a difference. And that's why many people pursue political positions, treasurer, judge. And so the question comes, well, how can I make a difference? Let me suggest to you how I can make a difference as a county court judge. County court judge, you've heard it, they're described as three hatters. They have the family court, the criminal court, the surrogate court, and ultimately they hear civil matters as well. With regard to the criminal matters, critical determinations that a county court judge has to make is when there's an offender and there's issues of sentencing, he or she, the judge, has to decide which offenders require sentences which take them off the streets, which offenders deserve the opportunity of an alternative sentence to incarceration, whether it be probation or drug court. I've been involved in that type of decision-making as a prosecutor that is making recommendations to the judge for years. And I think you probably have all heard our court system is changing to a degree. There's been within the court system development of treatment courts. Drug court is one of those courts. This is a court that recognizes that with certain nonviolent felony offenders, it's critical that the approach change, and it has changed. A drug court team, including the judge, a prosecutor, an attorney on behalf of the participant, a probation officer, a treatment coordinator, and somebody from a local substance abuse facility, they work as a team and meet with the offender. Once they're also on probation at the same time, but they meet with the offender more often. And that's designed to try to take that person's life and improve upon it. And it's only available for certain offenders, and the individual still has felony probation hanging over their head as a potential penalty. But they work together as a team to get the individual help for whatever mental health issues they may be having, substance abuse issues. They try to make sure they get reemployed, they get their GED, whatever it takes. This is one of the newer courts, and I can tell you as a prosecutor, I've had a wonderful experience of being involved in that court because that's an opportunity where we take somebody who otherwise would likely be incarcerated, and they get the benefit of avoiding that. We get the benefit of avoiding the costs, and we end up with a person who has now become a completely rehabilitated person. In family court, so much of what you do is how you communicate with people, how you listen to people. With children who are before you as a family court judge, children who have either found themselves on the wrong side of the law, your ability to communicate with that child, to get through to that child, to get them the services they need is critical. I spent a good portion of my life not only absorbing myself completely in my own children's life, but the community's children, involved in coaching, involved in teaching religious education. I'm very aware of what today's youth are facing, and I will bring exceptional energy to doing everything within my power to helping every child that I have some jurisdiction over as a judge. I see the time outside. I'd like to have a few more seconds in light of the fact, maybe the interruption. So this is critical. This is what a county court judge does. They also are involved, obviously, in other matters as well. And what I think you have to do is you have to take each case, you have to listen to the parties, you have to apply the law, and you have to try to make the best decision day in, day out. And that's what you bring to the job. That's what I brought to the job, despite the thoughts of some in this room. That's what I brought to the job as an assistant district attorney every day. I've tried to take every case seriously. I've tried to speak to victims of crime, and I've dealt with every single case that's come my way. That's about it. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to being the next county court judge. I will say one thing in parting. I have great respect for David Wooden. He is a wonderful man. He's a brilliant man. And what I've also discovered in going around the county and speaking to many people that know, they're delighted to have two very qualified candidates for county court judge. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. And our last candidate to speak is David Wooden, the Democratic candidate.
Thank you, Joan.
You're welcome.
I'd just like to echo what Chip has said in going around the county. I've heard nothing but good things about him, and many people have said, we wish we could both have you both as county court judge. And what I have told them is that Chip Taylor has the youth and vitality to go through this again. I don't know what that means. So I'd just like to give you just a brief glimpse into what the last couple of weeks have been like for me. It's like I'm going door to door. I knock on the door. A stranger that I've never met comes to the door, and I say, you know, hello, my name is David Wooden. I'm running for a county court judge. I'm a law clerk. And they say, are you an attorney? Yes. Do you represent people in court? No. Well, what do you do? And here we are. What does a law clerk do? That's a question I get asked. And the first question is, do you have to be an attorney? And yes, you do have to be an attorney. And I am an attorney. I was admitted in 1982, graduate of Albany Law School. And since 1982, I was in the right place at the right time. I was very fortunate to get the job that Terry Wilhelm was leaving. He was the occupant of the job before me, and before him, Charles Spickle. I was the third person in Greene County, to my knowledge, to have the job of law clerk. And the law clerk, what do they do? Basically, I've tried to boil this down. There's two basic aspects to what a law clerk does. The first is answering questions for the judge. The judge has a question. If he wants a point of view, he asks one of the attorneys in the case. If he wants the answer, he asks me. That's not to say, I mean, the judge knows the answer to a lot of these questions, but, I mean, the questions that I can get asked range from the very, you know, small questions like, gee, 10 years ago, what was the statute of limitations on a medical malpractice case? And I go and I look that up. Or it goes, runs the gamut to, here's a 500-page record and briefs. We want to know whether or not this town followed the rules when they want to put in this water district. Would you read that and tell me which side has the stronger legal argument? I'd really like to know. So, or it could range to, would you sit in on this murder case and listen to all the testimony and all the witnesses and be there while the case is going on, and then at the end, you know, help me rule on the objections and, you know, help put the charge together for the jury. So, I mean, questions can range from the very small to the very large. And then the other aspect of what the law clerk does is explaining the decision of the judge. Now, that is an important step in the judicial process because the judge has the final say, but all he has to do is decide, you know, this side wins, this side loses, you know, unless it's a jury question. But the process of putting that decision down in writing and the process of formulating a rationale for explaining why that is the decision is very important. And it's important for the parties, and it's important for the public. And it's important for two reasons. The first is that if the parties get a decision from the judge, they may not be happy with it. But if the decision is well-reasoned and explains why the judge came to that decision, the parties are more likely to accept, win or lose. And the second reason is, if they don't accept it, the next step is appeal. And they go to a higher court, the appellate division in Albany, and that court will look at the record and the decision and read it and say, why did that judge do what he did? And hopefully they'll sustain it. And that's the second part of the law clerk's job. It's, you know, answering questions for the judge and explaining what we do. And that's basically the job I've been doing for the last 28 years, since 1982, for the last four county judges. Now, sometimes the answer to the question is not in the books. Sometimes the judge will ask me a question, I'll go to the books, and I come back and I say, Judge, this is one of those questions you're going to have to provide the answer for. That's why you have the robe. Because that's what happens. Cases get settled out of court, or they come to court and they have, you hear both sides, but reasonable minds can differ on questions that come before the court. And sometimes it's a question that's never come to court before, and you need a judge to make the decision, and that will become part of the books. That'll be, you know, the next case like it that comes up. They'll find, you know, Judge Lawler's decision in the books and say, that's how we answer that question. That's part of our common law tradition. So that's the next logical step. This feels to me like this is the next logical step. After having served for four county judges answering their questions, may I say four very different individuals, and explaining their decisions in four different ways, I think the next logical step for me and for the people of the county is that I should serve as the next county judge, and that's my goal. I want to complete my service to Greene County. I've been there almost 30 years. They say 10 years is a long time, and it is. But for me, it's more like it's the last quarter, and I just want to do my best to serve the people of Greene County and do a good job answering those questions that my law clerk can't find the answer to. All right, I haven't gotten the timeout sign yet, so I guess I'll roll it further. Just my background, I grew up in Vermont. My wife, Margaret, was here from Catskill. Her mom was Rosemary Byron. She was a long-term attorney, one of the first women attorneys here in Greene County. We met in college, and we spent 1 year on the West Coast, but we came back to Greene County because that's where her family was, and my family was still in Vermont. We wanted to be close to our families. And this is where we've raised our son, Jonathan, who was born in Greene County. Now he's just turned 19, and when I finish here tonight, I'm going to be heading out to join her. She's over in Massachusetts. It's Parents Weekend over at Hampshire College, so that's why she's not with us here tonight. By way of other background, I mean, I've been involved in lots of other projects in the court system, but maybe I'll leave that in case, you know, there's a question or two that comes up. And thank you.
WGXC online radio. They're bringing up the cards with the questions on, and so the candidates will be asking questions next.
Okay, treasurers. We'll start here, go there, and then we'll go back and forth. Okay, after taking office, what will your first task be?
Me, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Fine. My first task will be to evaluate the internal control system of the treasurer's office. My major concern is cyber fraud. That as we begin to use new technology, we become more and more vulnerable. And I'm always reminded of the case of the Duanesburg school system that lost $2.5 million on a cyber fraud case that went to the Ukraine and they only got $2 million back. I would be very concerned that that might happen to the county. I'm very concerned that it would happen to the town of Catskill, and that's why we've implemented some new strong internal controls.
My first task would be to refinance the county courthouse renovation debt. We've got a lot of debt in very short-term notes, which, as anybody who owns a home would know in this market, you do not want to not convert to fixed-rate financing. And we are at historic low interest rates right now. So while that's, you know, right, we're in that window, probably should have been done a couple of months ago, but while we're in the window this week with historic generational low interest rates, those short-term floating-rate bonds that we have been financing the courthouse renovation, I would immediately lock those in at long-term favorable fixed rates, because that is the one sort of fleeting opportunity that's not going to be there for too long, probably. Certainly shouldn't be treated as so. The other thing that I would do that's, you know, probably second in terms of time sensitivity would be to maybe invite the New York State Comptroller's Office to come in and do a full just audit of the, you know, of the county, even with the best of intentions. Even with the best of intentions, anybody in a generation just could accumulate some practices that perhaps just go unnoticed after 18 years. So, you know, I think it's just good to get in there. If I'm going to be signing off on everything, just in the same light that Peter is, you know, worried about, you know, things, you want to make sure that you're, as soon as you're putting your signature on things on the books, that they are, you know, properly accounted for. And the way to do that is, you know, a full fresh audit. And, you know, I'd like to start off my term with the county that way.
I'd like to respond to that for a minute,
sure.
Because I agree with Al, okay? Anyone who takes a political position where they are responsible for the finances should call for an audit right away, whether it's the comptroller or whether you go out and you hire a public accountant to come and do it. I did it with the town of Catskill. I would expect that, like Alan, I would do it if I were the treasurer.
You'll need the first this time? Can you name three objectives as treasurer?
Yeah, they were part of my speech. One is more fiscal responsibility. We cannot continue. We have seven straight years of adopting a budget that just right out of the gate does not compute, does not balance. We do not spend what we are taking in. We're spending more. So the first thing is, and particularly now, we're going to have a budget that is presented and apparently dropped off at the legislature. You know, I don't know if it's abandoned or what, but you know, the guy who puts the budget together is leaving service of the county, apparently, you know, at the end of this month. So, promoting fiscal responsibility, starting right with the budget that's going to be adopted for next year. I mean, we cannot pretend that we have more money coming in than we do, like we have over the last 7 years. So, basically, fiscal responsibility, transparency, getting things online. And the third would be the Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Hotline.
Peter.
Well, I would agree with Alan that the first thing should probably be some refinancing and internal control evaluation. But beyond that, I think it's important that the legislature understand that the fund balance does not last forever. And once it's gone, you're in really big trouble. We have spent, in the town of Catskill, we have spent an inordinate amount, a whole lot of time trying to preserve a fund balance. You know, we like to call it a rainy day account. Well, you know, it's a rainy day, okay? So in reality, you use that in the rainy day. I know too many communities in Columbia County that have used up all their fund balance and are in major, major trouble. I think that transparency, I think the budget should be online just like it is in the town of Catskill. We put a tentative budget online, we put a preliminary budget online, we'll put a final budget online. And I certainly think that the consolidated or that financial report that is sent to the comptroller on an annual basis, we need to find a way to make that more accessible to the Catskill taxpayers. Because I get people who say to me, you know, I'd like to see that report, but I can't get it. Well, you know, I mean, it's thick. The town of Catskills is like that. You know, and if you want it, we actually have to ask you to foil it because we have to make copies and we have to find the time to do that. No one's asked for that, but it's available in the town clerk's office for anybody to come in and take a look at. I think the treasurer's office should make hard copies available for everybody, whatever the document is.
Two things. Our fund balance is gone. We are already in the regulatory danger zone. We cannot use any more of it. We have basically, it's called working capital at this point. Our usable fund balance is gone. We will be in regulatory danger if we deplete it any further. The state controller's office allows you around 5 to 7% that they expect you to maintain as a cushion. Our county is just any business or any household can go cash flow negative for months at a time, and we cannot, you know, have a zero cash balance, and we cannot just sort of be issuing bonds to pay our bills. That would be not in keeping with our regulatory commitments, and it would probably really risk our credit rating. We, as I said before, we've gone from $17 million in debt to $27 million in debt in the last 3 years. If our credit rating is degraded, which we are at fantastically greater risk of right now. My background is in as a ratings analyst, so I know exactly what they're looking at, and we are in very significant danger of having our credit rating degraded in the next couple of years. That is going to be one of the single most challenging tasks as a treasurer to maintain and defend that credit rating. As I said, our credit cards are way maxed out. Our savings account is depleted. We do not look good right now, going into the next couple of years, especially starting off with a $5 to $10 million budget deficit that we're not really ready to explain how to close. And we are already the 12th highest taxed county in all of New York State as a percentage of income. We're a county of modest means, and people are already paying a much higher percentage of their budget, household budget's income to taxes than our 50 other counties in the 62 counties in the state. So we are really pushing the limit in every regard, and we've got to make some more serious decisions.
I think perhaps you've already, both of you, answered this question. What are the biggest challenges facing the county? I think you've already satisfied that. I thought so. If you are presented a bill to be paid by the treasurer, but are sure the services have not been performed, what do you do?
I would never approve the bill and never sign the check. We're doing an internal audit to find out where that bill came from and whether or not the services were delivered, the services or the goods were delivered. If they were not, that check would never leave my office.
Agreed. And the only thing I would add to that is you would want to find out why a bill like that got to your office, because that really signifies some other problems, and how things like that can,
As treasurer, how do you protect county fiscal investments, both long and short term, from the kind of losses many counties have experienced in the past recession?
Yeah, well, that's a very complicated question. So basically, it encompasses many, many things. I mean, many counties are in very significant financial trouble around our state and around the country. And a lot of it, despite this question's premise, is not really related to not having the money in particularly safe places. It's more, as I've been saying, not having the money in hands of people that are spending and allocating responsibly. So I would disagree with the premise of the question a little bit, but to answer the question nonetheless, one of the things that I've spent my entire career on, as I said, is finding out what investments are safe for people's retirement funds and people's household investments and such. And so it really comes down to finding the greatest return for the risk that a county should be taking, which is really quite low. The county is not in the gambling business. It's sort of in the keeping safe money business and getting as much return on your cash on hand as possible. But maybe the silver lining of our poor financial situation is we don't have a lot of money anymore. So where we had $10 million to sort of put in all kinds of places 5 years ago, we really cannot put our money in very far from the checkbook over these next couple of years, because we are very likely going to need every penny of it.
There are very, very strong investment guidelines put out by the comptroller, and they are very conservative. And I think that I would try to follow those as closely as I possibly could.
We have a couple of questions asking about the IDA and how you would handle that.
Anything specific? That's a wide open question.
What is your take on the IDA issue?
I'll jump in here, okay? I'll jump in.
There's plenty for
First
everybody.
First of all, the Authority Budget Office issued a 6-page memorandum. I think that the county and the board of the IDA need to respond to that, okay? If you are a public authority and subject to the Authority Budget Office, you better respond to it. But I have a pretty interesting idea, okay? What the legislature needs to do is take the bull by the horns and appoint directors for limited terms, not indeterminate terms of 15, 20 years. That's not healthy and it's not good. And it's not good government. They have the power to do that. The question is, do they have the will? And I think it's going to be the role of the treasurer, whoever that may be, to tell them that they have to develop the will.
Yeah, so that's all very good, and I would not disagree with it. The IDA, as plagued as it might be, is incredibly important for this county. I mean, one of the I've talked about our taxes paid as a percentage of income being higher than most in the state, and a huge part of solving that problem is getting more income for the people in this county. And we need to do a much better job of that, primarily through the IDA, and getting income up so that we can sort of balance our budget a little easier without having to, you know, consider laying people off. So that their work is incredibly important. And, you know, anybody, despite all the anger with the IDA, I think most people have to realize that we need it to function properly. We can, you know, it's an important part of our growth and our development. And, you know, I think that the biggest thing that I would say about the IDA is that, especially in light of the last couple of months' developments, are that we need to incentivize the two right goals. First of all, the IDA exists solely for the benefit of taxpayers in this county. This is not sort of some hedge fund that is off on its own, you know, away from the county legislature that should be just sort of left alone. It exists to create better lives for taxpayers. And to that end, we need to make sure that whatever compensation guidelines are at the IDA, they adhere to the two most important things. One is getting jobs for Greene County residents. Not anybody, not just jobs, not salaries that go back to pay property taxes in Ulster County or in Schenectady and everywhere else. Jobs, if there's going to be bonuses paid, and that's an open question, but if there are, there should really be two criteria. How many people employed in Greene County, the taxpayers who funded and started this organization are employed, you know, based on what they've done? That is an important criteria. The second one, as Peter talked about earlier, is the pilot arrangements. The IDA has to realize that just getting people to fill buildings here in the ground and then not have them share the tax burden is not really a great outcome. That's not really helping our citizens and our taxpayers as they should be. They should be negotiating much more tough terms in terms of getting the host communities to receive some of those benefits directly, not through some mechanism that goes through the IDA and somebody can tap into the money if they file out the right forms. It should go right to where all the rest of the taxpayer money is and alleviate the taxpayer burden. Those are the two things the IDA should focus on. Filling up buildings with people that, you know, with businesses that don't hire Greene County residents and don't pay Greene County taxes is not, you know, a goal.
More questions, but time is running, so I'll give you each 1 minute to sum up.
Okay, so I mean, it really is the same thing. We are in a very, very difficult financial situation over the next 2 years. You know, maybe it's not coincidental that everybody's sort of leaving now when there's so many difficult challenges. I don't know. I don't want to be cynical, but this is really going to be the start of a multi-year problem-solving period for our county financially. We have spent all our savings. We have run up our credit cards. We are addicted to overspending our means. And we have taxed people to beyond the level that we should expect them to be paying taxes. It is a very, very difficult situation. We have got to start to use people's tax money smarter, and we've got to spend less. So second point, again, transparency. We need to let people know where their money is going, so that if we're going to ask them to pay more money next year, we need to let them know and feel comfortable with what we're doing with the money they're already giving. Peter talked about having the budget online. The budget is online, and I can tell you as a financial professional, it is not useful to determine anything. There's no detail behind it. You cannot conclude where money is going. I mean, it's very high level, and it needs to be broken down in much more detail so that people can see, what departments are using money for what. And there really is no argument against doing that. Why would you not want to let taxpayers know where their tax dollars are going? There's just no good reason for it. And then again, towards that end is Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Hotline. Let's just try and be smarter with what we're doing with people's money. And, there's a lot of people out there that know a lot more about what's happening in certain departments and certain, aspects of government than certainly I do, and maybe Peter as well. I think we can use some help to look into some of those things and see how we can be using people's tax money more smartly.
So based on that, I would also add that the town of Catskill is exploring the problem with property taxes and school taxes. I've had more people stop me on the street and say, I got my school tax bill and it equals my Social Security check. How do I eat this month? Based on that, I think it's time for the county, the towns, and the villages to step back and take a look at how we collect these. Why do other counties collect on installment plans? Why can't we? Why does the school system need all of its money up front? Why can't they get half at the time they normally get it, and another half 4 or 5 months later? And we're not talking about the real property tax here. The real problem here is the school tax, which none of us who are in town government or village government or even county government have any control over. But we can control the way it's collected. And I think that the taxpayers of Greene County deserve that break. And we need to explore how we make that happen. My town tax collector says it can happen, but we have to get the county to agree. Well, everybody likes to get their money up front, but the fact of the matter is you might not be able to. And I think that's a dialogue that has to begin whoever the new treasurer is.
I think that's a great point.
Effective judge.
I think we both probably covered that. I'll just say.
I think you did. Yeah.
My background as an attorney since 1981, and my work in the court, sitting in the courtroom and researching the decisions. I don't know if I mentioned my undergraduate work was at Williams College, and I have a teaching degree from Reed College in Portland, Oregon. That's my background, but mainly it's been here working in the Greene County courts for the last 28 years. That's what's going to make me an effective judge, I believe.
I think I covered it as well, but 17 years practicing in the very court that I'm seeking to preside over. The Greene County Court is as a prosecutor for 14 years and in private practice for 3 years. And I think, as I emphasized before, I think the diversity of my practice and
appearing in front of the court, preparing witnesses and preparing cases and understanding how the process works from that side of the bench, I think is a very valuable experience. I think it gives, if I became judge, it would give me an ability to sort of understand those issues based upon that experience.
Is it important for a judge to have had courtroom experience?
Well, that's, I certainly believe it's important. I'm not suggesting that somebody couldn't be a great judge without it, but I think it's certainly, based on years of experience and stuff, it's one of the few big advantages I have over Dave. So, you know, for me to disavow it now would probably not make a lot of sense. But I do. I mean, out of great respect for Dave, I do believe that practicing and all that trial work and all that experience of understanding where the litigants come from, you know, representing many children, representing the people and dealing with victims of crime and dealing with litigants, I think it's invaluable. I think it really is, because I think it helps you as a judge then, as you sit there and you can say, I remember that. If an attorney is explaining to you, well, this is what I got going on, Judge. This is the circumstances. This is what my, I think it's real life experience, and I think it is valuable.
And I agree that courtroom experience is vital, and I just want to stress that I have courtroom experience. Sitting in the courtroom, as I talk to my colleagues around the state who are law clerks, there are some in other parts of the state that only get to see the back office. They may be in a foreclosure part, they may be in a part where they just read the same type of case every day, but my judges have chosen to use my talents as a law clerk who's in court as much as he's out of court. So I have experience sitting through the very type of cases that I'm going to be called upon to adjudicate, listening to the same witnesses that the judge listens to, taking my own notes, and realizing that I may well be called upon to draft up a decision that the judge will review, and if he agrees with it, that may be the decision that the court goes with. I think there's many roads to the bench, and is it a prosecutorial career and practice, or in a law guardian practice, is that a valid road? Certainly. And we certainly have the example of Judge Waller, who was a fine prosecutor before he became county judge. I believe, though, that my experience is unique, and there are very few people that have had the benefit of my time and training in the courtroom, and I think that it's an ideal training to be county court judge.
Do you have any goals or objectives as judge?
I think I've said before, my goal as judge would be to walk out on the last day of my term with the same enthusiasm and determination that I had the first day when I was sworn in. I realize that every day is a day that's important to the people that are coming before you that day, and just maintain that sense of dedication to the job throughout my term.
Tough to beat that answer, I think. You know, I think that would be my goal as well. I think you go into that job trying every day to make the right decision. And, you know, you understand how important the issues are to the parties that are before you. And you take seriously their concerns, their problems. And then you step back and you understand you have to apply the law to the set of facts. And, I would certainly work every day on those goals I talked about before as well, as making the process, certainly in family court and some of these courts, I would bring great energy in trying to speak to the individuals before me in need of help in a certain way, as to maybe motivate them, to change their direction. You know, when you have an opportunity to do that as judge, and I think you have it more and more with the treatment courts, and you have it more and more when you deal with the community's youth, for sure, and also with the adults that come before you in family court, reminding them over and over to insulate the children from what's going on, and that would be a goal of mine, to change lives in that way as best as I could.
Do you have any ideas of how you can mitigate the costs of the court system for the taxpayer.
The treasurer, is that a treasurer question? Oh boy. Well, you know, I mean, I guess Dave, you could probably help me with this because your role. I mean, I guess as a judge, you do review those vouchers from those attorneys all the time. I don't know. Cost saving. Is that a role? Do we do anything about that?
There was one state. Is it my turn?
Oh yes. My answer was so dynamite.
I read of one state. I can't remember which state it is now that has mandated that judges be provided with a breakdown of what the costs of the various sentencing options are as they're making the decision about what the appropriate sentence is. And I do not agree with that. I do not think that that's an appropriate rule for the judge to be incorporating what's the cost of. Should we send this person to prison? Should we put him on probation? What's going to be the cheapest way of dealing with it? That's not the role of the court. That's not the role of that's not justice. But I will say this, having been witness to the work that the drug court has done, and I haven't been directly involved in drug court yet. Mr. Taylor has. But I've seen the results of Judge Waller's drug court, and I've been at graduations where these people have given their experiences and listen to people that have been involved with them. In my mind, that's an effective way of dealing with offenders that can benefit from it. And when you measure the cost of at least the 2 years that they've been in drug court, that they've been clean and sober, now they probably would have been clean and sober if you put them in prison too, but how much would that cost as opposed to if it takes a certain amount of time to meet with them weekly or monthly and get them through drug court, I think that's a good deal for everybody, and it's a financial good deal as well.
Not to mention you're probably raising the likelihood that they don't reoffend. If they get that treatment, they're in a better place than if they go to jail. I mean, maybe that worked for certain people, they're not going to drink again. But I think probably if you really studied it, you're probably looking at saving the cost of any reoffense to a community.
I have a question about plea bargaining. Explain the role of the judge in plea bargaining.
Well, two things you need to know about plea bargaining. One is that it's a necessity and it's a reality and it goes on in every court. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but for purposes of tonight, we'll say 90% as opposed to 10% of the cases that come before the county court are disposed of by some sort of a plea, not by a trial. If it was by a trial in every case, we wouldn't have two county judges. We'd need at least eight to get through the volume of criminal cases that we have. So plea bargaining and dispositions by plea are the reality. The role of the court is to make sure that it's done within the bounds of the law. There are restrictions on what kinds of pleas you can take and what sentences are available. And the conscience of the court in terms of, is the plea an acceptable disposition? Is this something that I can go along with as judge? And I've seen all four of my judges that I work with, come down on either side of that question at various times. Usually the people make a recommendation, and if it's palatable to the judge, he'll say yes, and if it's not, he'll say no. And then they have to go back and renegotiate. The second part of that, though, is that we call it, you hear it mentioned as plea bargaining, and it's not always such a bargain. Like just this week, Judge Lawler handed out a sentence of 20 to life to an individual for a homicide. That person's going to spend the next 20 years of his life in prison. That was based on a plea. Now, the defendant in that case got the benefit of certainty of knowing what his sentence was going to be. He didn't have to risk a trial, but I doubt very much he would call it a bargain. So we call it a plea agreement.
Once again, a complete answer. I don't know what I can add to that other than a very wise man once also told me don't refer to it as a prosecutor as a plea bargain. So I've
taken that advice to heart, and I always, when I'm in court speaking on behalf of the people, I refer to it as a plea arrangement. Because the public perception is that, oh, it's a bargain, you plea bargain everything, but just as Mr. Wooden said, often it's not a bargain. But I can't give a more complete answer than that, and I don't think everybody wants me to sit here and hear me say the same thing in a different way.
Well, the hour is getting late, and so I'll give you each a minute to sum up.
I'll sum up very quickly. Thanks again for having me here tonight. It is greatly appreciated. It's a great process, and Alan was indicated, probably should do more of this. This should be something that happens more in these races, and I've enjoyed the evening, and I appreciate it very much.
And I've enjoyed every minute of this campaign with this gentleman standing next to me. All I can say is that this is an important decision. This is probably the most important decision that you're going to make in this election, because it's local and it's long-term. It's for the next 10 years, and the person that you select is going to be making decisions about your mortgages, the custody cases in the county, and the crimes that are committed in the county for the next 10 years. So I agree, we should have more of these sessions where we get a chance to meet the voters, and I just urge you to give it a lot of thought. And if the person that you select to make those decisions is myself, I pledge to do the very best job that I can. Thank you.
Before we end, you wanted to, and we have the 50-50.
I would like to thank all of the candidates. I'm not a particularly political person. In fact, most of the time, I hate it. But I have to thank you all for being gentlemen and conducting yourselves as gentlemen. Yes.
Okay, we have a 50-50 drawing, and the winner is
109-3864.
You're listening to WGXC Online Radio.
You want it?
Hey,
that was.
How much is it?
Apparently, Dick May has won the. Dick May is buying at the bar. This is Tom Rowe with WGXC Online Radio, signing off for tonight. That was the Meet the Candidates Forum live from the Pegasus Restaurant in Coxsackie with Greene County Judge candidates Charles Taylor and David Wooden, and Greene County Treasurer candidates Alan Pavese and Peter Marku.
For the membership, next meeting is the second Thursday of November, and we'll be at the Imagine That meeting, our wonderful treasurer.